Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up on a farm in Lecompton, Kansas, and graduated from the Naval Academy in 1964. On May 19, 1967, on his 75th mission, with only 5 days before he was to return home, he was shot down over North Vietnam and spent nearly 6 years as a prisoner of war. He gives 100 speeches per year and is one of America's greatest motivational speakers. A true American hero, his name, Captain Charlie Plum. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Captain Charlie Plum, who was one of 591 American POWs released on February 18th, 1973. Captain, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, it's my pleasure to be with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
You bet. That's a very good place to start, because I wouldn't be who I am today had it not been for my mom and dad. I was born during World War II. My father had been drafted, but then was not physically qualified to go to war. And so he, by that time, he thinking that he was going to the Army, he sent us, he took his family and placed us in Lecompton, Kansas, where he thought we'd be safe until he came back. Well, as it turned out, he didn't have to go. And so there we were in Lecompton, Kansas, a place somewhat distant from relatives. His family was in Missouri, and my mom's family was in Illinois. So I grew up in that little town of 325 people, had a great childhood, didn't know I was poor, didn't miss any of the amenities that the rich kids had, because everybody else was poor. And so I went to a very small grade school, had a dog and fished in the river and did things that Midwest farm kids do.
What's the biggest thing, Charlie, you learned from Mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
From my mother, I learned forgiveness. I never saw her angry at anyone at any time. She never had a bad word to say, even when someone had faulted her. And so she was a wonderful, wonderful, forgiving woman. My father taught me self-discipline, how to work hard, how to stick with it, and he taught me tenacity.
Charlie, how was it you got from Lecompton, Kansas, on a farm, to the Naval Academy?
Well, I didn't have any great designs. I'd love to tell you that it was a goal of mine to be an admiral or command a fleet or fly an airplane, but I really didn't have any of those desires. What I needed was an education. My parents couldn't afford to send me to college, so I did the old shotgun trick to every school I knew with all of my background, and lo and behold, I got an appointment to Annapolis. I'd never seen the ocean. I'd never ridden in an airplane, and I got on the Greyhound bus in Kansas City, Kansas, and 2 days later, I was pledging to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Captain Charlie Plum, how was it you became a fighter pilot?
That was almost by accident, too. I dreamed of flying when I was a little kid. I'd see airplanes go over, but quite honestly, Jack, I never thought I'd be able to do that. It really was not within my realm of conception. As I went through the Naval Academy, we were introduced to all the various things that we could do after we graduated. We went down to play Marine for a while. We went on submarines and ships, and so we got a sort of a taste of what it might be like. I went down to Pensacola for several flights in training airplanes down there and just really got the bug. I really, really wanted to fly. Still didn't know if it was possible, because they of the roughly 1,000 guys and gals, of course, it was just guys at that time that graduated from the Naval Academy, only about 100 were sent to aviation. And I was one of the lucky ones that got to go. One of the things was just my physical health allowed me to qualify. Still had 20/20 vision and good blood pressure. And so when I graduated from Annapolis, I married my high school sweetheart, and we set sail for Pensacola, Florida.
You graduated in 1964.
I did.
You go to Vietnam. And when we come back, we're going to talk about your 75th mission on May 19th, 1967. And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with Captain Charlie Plum. And on his 75th mission, approximately 15 miles south of Hanoi, on May 19th, 1967, Charlie, what happened?
It was a fighter cover mission. I was part of the flight group that protected the bomb group. We were going on in on some pretty heavy targets, and it was the first time that we'd been that close to Hanoi. We weren't supposed to get into that area. At the time, it was the most heavily defended city in the world. And so there were SAMs and FLACs and FLAC and small arms fire, and of course, they had their jet fighters that would come up from their air bases. And so it was. We knew it was going to be a pretty big day. Well, I launched from the aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk with my co-pilot in the back seat, my radar intercept officer. We rendezvoused with an airborne tanker and took on about 6,000 pounds of fuel, and just to give us enough gas to make it to the target and back. And we headed for the beach. I'll never forget that day because it was the biggest flight group I guess I had ever seen. We were going on lots of different targets. The day, the 19th of May, I found out later, was Ho Chi Minh's birthday. Now, Ho Chi Minh was the George Washington of Vietnam. And so they all celebrated his birthday on the 19th of May. And unbeknownst to me, the psychological warfare team had figured that would be a good day to hit a lot of the targets when they were out celebrating. Well, they may have been celebrating, but they were pretty close to their guns because there was flak all over the sky. SAMs coming in and out. I made a big mistake that day. Of course, I had only 5 days before the end of my tour. Some of my buddies had shot down MiGs, and that was sort of the ultimate for a fighter pilot, is to shoot down an enemy airplane. I was on the left-hand side of this flight group of about probably 30 or 40 airplanes. I was in the far left. And I saw on my radar scope a bogey, an unidentified flying object, and I assumed it was an enemy airplane because it was coming our way. I slipped out of the formation, and that was my big mistake. You know, a fighter pilot will always tell you, stick with your wingman, stick with your wingman, never leave your wingman, and that day I left my wingman. I was feeling pretty bulletproof because I had scrapes with MiGs. I'd fought them off before. I had been hit by surface-to-air missiles and flak, and I had always survived. I'd always been able to bring that airplane back. But on this particular day, I slipped outside the formation to go chase this blip on my radar scope. Now, the rules of engagement were that you had to visually identify another airplane before you could shoot it down. And while our missiles would go out to 20 or 25 miles, you had to get within 5 miles to see the other airplane, and so you had to get in close. Once you're in that close, you had to really act fast because then you were in within range of their missiles and their guns. So I approached the enemy airplane. I'm outside the formation now. I get within 5 miles, and I see it's not an enemy airplane. It's one of our jets that was pointed towards us to jam the radar sights that were behind us. Now, at this time, of course, this airplane, this A6, was doing a good job of jamming. But, oh, by the way, I was no longer in the flight formation, so he wasn't protecting me. And that was when the missile came up my tail, exploded some 12,000 pounds of jet fuel we had on board, sent that airplane topsy-turvy in the end down towards our ice paddy below. I ejected, my co-pilot ejected, and that was the beginning of the next 6 years in North Vietnam.
2,103 days, 70-plus months, nearly 6 years, Captain Charlie Plum. How did you pass the time, and how did you survive?
Well, the time certainly was the biggest enemy we had. I mean, obviously, the torture and the disease and the bad food and lack of food and even lack of water sometimes, and the heat was just unbearable. But the time, just day after day after day, of not knowing if you were going to be alive tomorrow and when you'd ever get out of there. And, of course, I was very optimistic. In fact, we were all very optimistic at the very beginning. It was really funny. I remember even in that first prison cell, I'm thinking to myself, well, let's see, the ship will head back home in 5 days, but then we've hit them so hard on this 19th of May, maybe the war will be over by then. I'll fly home, and I'll meet the ship in San Diego when it gets back in 2 weeks. I was just terribly optimistic. And in fact, optimism was pretty rampant, particularly among the younger guys and the younger prisoners of war. If anybody would come into the camp and we'd establish communication, I mean, as the years went on, if anybody would come into that camp after I was there 3 or 4 years, and the first question we'd ask was, when do you think the war would be over? If he said anything more than 6 months, we'd cut off communication and just assume he was an idiot. So we were very optimistic, and I was very optimistic at the very beginning. And I think optimism certainly played a part in my survival. And, of course, a positive attitude. One of the things that I challenged myself, because I believe in the scripture that says that all things are possible, and all you have to do is love the Lord. And I thought, I hereby challenge myself to figure that out, you know, to see if I really can survive and even thrive through this, and be a better person because of it. And so it was sort of a puzzle for me. Every day I would look for ways to better myself, that this experience might make me a better person. And so did the other guys. And once we established communication with the other guys in that prison camp, we taught courses. We taught college courses to each other, and they gave us credit after we came back. Several universities gave us college credit for the things we learned without a textbook, without an overhead, without a PowerPoint, without anything, just tapping on the walls and passing around information. Physically, we kept strong physically, push-ups and sit-ups and running in place and isometrics and anything that we could do inside that prison cell. So the survival, you know, the secret to survival, I think, number one was my faith. I truly believed that God just doesn't give us any challenges, that he doesn't give us the wisdom and power and strength to overcome. And then the faith in my buddies, you know, the other guys in that prison camp. Once we established communication with each other, and sometimes if they would give you a roommate, if you live with another guy or two or three or four, sometimes in a larger group in those little prison cells, it was just wonderful to have that support, you know, just that mutual support.
We're talking to Captain Charlie Plum, 2,103 days, nearly 6 years as a prisoner of war. Most of that time was spent in a windowless 8-foot by 8-foot cell. Charlie, tell us what that was like.
It was very depressing at first. I was a fighter pilot. You know, I was king of the world. I was the guy that, you know, flew at 40 and 50,000 feet at twice the speed of sound. That was my life. And to suddenly be caged like an animal with the ability to pace three steps in one direction and three steps in the other before I ran into a wall, and allowed outside maybe if I was lucky twice a week, just so that I could dump the bucket, which I called my toilet, into the sewer, and to have absolutely nothing to do. They gave us not a book to read, no radio, no telephone, no TV. I didn't have an iPhone or Bluetooth or a BlackBerry. It was just it's just amazing what happens to you when you have no inputs in your mind. But the good news is, when you have no external inputs, then you use your mind to create things. And so I and the other guys did it too, you know, just across the board. The POWs would sit on their bed, and one of the first things I did was go back through my entire life. From the very first memory I had at age 3 in Lecompton, Kansas, and try to remember every book I'd ever read, every movie I'd ever seen, every coach I'd ever had, every friend I'd ever met. And that took me about 3 months, at 8 or 10 hours a day. It took me 3 months to totally exhaust my memory. And then, even after that, when I would come across, just by accident, something that I hadn't remembered in the first 3 months, it was like reliving a memory, re-meeting an old friend, or re-remembering the points of a movie that I had seen.
We're talking to Captain Charlie Plum, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Captain Charlie Plum, who was one of 591 American POWs released on February 18th, 1973, and you refer to them as your buddies. Charlie, one of your buddies was Senator John McCain. Tell us about Senator McCain.
I knew John pretty well by the time we were prisoners together at the Naval Academy. I had lived in the same company with Joe McCain. That's John's brother. Then I served under John's and Joe's father, the Admiral J.S. McCain. And then in flight training in Meridian, Mississippi, the John McCain, Senator John McCain, was a flight instructor. And he taught me to fly jets. So I knew them and I knew the family quite well. John was a very strict flight instructor. You just didn't want to get your check ride with John McCain. And it was really a pretty grueling course of study there in Meridian, trying to learn to fly these jet airplanes. And so while I knew who he was and certainly knew his reputation, quite honestly, I didn't like the guy very much. He was just too tough an instructor. Well, I was shot down in May of 1967, and 3 months later, into my prison camp came a guy on a stretcher. Now, I didn't recognize him at first. I could just peek through a crack at my door and see him coming through the personnel gate. He was carried by a couple of guards, just buddy rags on this gurney. They tossed him in this cell 3. That was two doors down from the prison cell that I was in at that time. I didn't know who it was. We tried to communicate, but the bloody rags kept coming out of that cell every day, and we knew the guy was still alive, but he was really, really hurting. And as it turned out, he had 7 broken bones. I mean, he could just barely move. He was closer to death than anybody that I knew there. And injured far worse than any other prisoner of war that I ever saw. So he was pretty close to death in that prison cell. But I still didn't know it was him. through with a pair of shears, the old hand clippers. They're going to clean up a prisoner of war. The sight of those shears was always troublesome for us, because the only reason they'd clean up a prisoner of war is for the guy to see a delegation. This is the days of Jane Fonda and Ramsey Clark and Tom Hayden. The anti-war element would come over to North Vietnam. They would the Vietnamese would clean one of us up to show them how good the treatment was, and it was a total sham. But the first indication was always those clippers. They took the clippers into cell 3. The next day, outside of cell 3, there was a big pile of white hair, almost fluorescent-looking hair. And I knew at that moment that it had to be my old flight instructor, John McCain. And it was. And they wanted to send him home. They wanted to clean him up so that he could send him home. His father, the admiral at the time, was Sink Pack, Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific. And so John's dad was in charge of the Vietnam War while John and I were there. So they wanted to send John home, and they offered him early release. And John said, never, not in your wildest dreams would I ever embarrass my father by doing that, break the code of conduct, give up on my pals, the other prisoners of war. You take your idea and shove it. And they got really nasty when he said that to them, and they put him in solitary confinement for another 2 years. So this guy, regardless of your political leanings, I can tell you, this guy is one of the toughest hombres I have ever seen.
Charlie, in the last segment, you mentioned that you got through this almost 7 years with faith. Did you ever doubt or question God?
I never did, Jack. There was never a moment in that experience that I ever really felt that God had left me. I felt that he had a purpose in my life, and it wasn't going to be easy, but if I continued to keep the faith, things would work out. Now, part of that sounds like a pretty glorious, religious thing to say, but part of that was just my own self-survival. Part of that was just very basic self-survival. That's all I can say. Because I knew that to give up on God was to lose hope and thus lose my life. One of the advantages the prisoners of war in Vietnam had, I think, over any other war, was that we knew the history. And we knew that about a third of the guys died in Korea in the prison camps, not because they were shot or poisoned or anything else. They died because they gave up. They lost their faith. And so, in a way, it was just a survival technique that I knew to lose that faith was probably going to be to lose my life. And so I felt it was just, it was vital, just absolutely vital that I keep the faith.
We're talking to Captain Charlie Plum, who gives 100 speeches a year and is one of America's greatest motivational speakers. And his book is entitled I'm No Hero. Charlie, one of your famous quotes is, "My premise is that adversity is a horrible thing to waste."
Well, Jack, I truly believe that within every challenge in life, there's some kind of an opportunity. It's that gift, that God gives us that's wrapped up like a big old problem. And so if, in fact, that challenge that we call adversity has something within it of value, then it's incumbent upon us to find that value and use it. And to not do that, to take an adversity, for instance, and waste it by blaming other people for the problems and feeling sorry for yourself and denying that you have any control of your destiny. And this is human nature, and you do it, and I do it, and everybody does it when we get into a problem. And in doing so, we deny the opportunity, and we waste that adversity.
One of the people instrumental in ending the Vietnam War was the legendary president from Notre Dame, Father Ted Hesburgh, who's, I think, 96 right now. And one of his famous quotes is, "Courage isn't the absence of fear. It is acting with integrity in the face of fear."
I truly believe that.
The title of your book, Charlie Plum, is I'm No Hero. Your military honors include 2 Purple Hearts, the Legion of Merit, the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, the POW Medal. You're one of America's greatest motivational speakers. Why the title, I'm No Hero?
Well, I don't really feel like that I did anything that you wouldn't have done or anybody else wouldn't have done under similar circumstances. I think that we all have that strength within to not only overcome challenges of everyday life, but to actually win through them and take advantage of those challenges of life. And so my heroes are the guys that came back from Vietnam are still in wheelchairs, or my heroes are the single mothers that are trying to raise their children and just lost their job. You know, my heroes are the people that in everyday life just step up to the plate, answer the call, and press on through the challenges that eventually make them better. And so, when I first came home, I was treated like a hero. There were ticker tape parades, and they gave me tickets to all the ball games and a brand new Ford. So I was treated like a hero, but it didn't feel like I'd done anything extra special. That I had just lived my life to survive every day, and that and even when they came in and asked me to write the book, I thought, find a guy that climbed a mountain or swam an ocean or set out in this impossible task and survived. All I did was just put one foot in front of the other day after day for nearly 6 years, and there's nothing very heroic about that. So that's the reason for the title of my book, I'm No Hero.
If you want to learn more, www.charlieplumb.com. And Charlie was inducted to the National Speakers Association Hall of Fame in 2010. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Captain Charlie Plum, who gives 100 speeches a year, one of which is entitled The Triumph of an Ordinary Man. Charlie, let's go back to the mid-80s, and you're in a restaurant entitled the Maggie Jones Restaurant in Kansas City, and somebody comes up to you.
I'd been home for probably 15 years by then, and well-adjusted, to everyday life, and of course, I was making lots of speeches, and so my experience had not faded. But the surprise of that night certainly brought it back to life. I was sitting there with my wife and another couple, and about 2 tables over, a guy kept looking at me, and he got up, walked over to my table, pointed his finger at me, and said, "You're Captain Plum." I looked up at him and said, "Yes, that's true. I'm Captain Plum." He said, "You flew jet fighters in Vietnam. You're a fighter pilot. Part of that Top Gun outfit. You were shot down over enemy territory. You parachuted into enemy hands, and you spent nearly 6 years as a prisoner of war." Well, I was flabbergasted. The best I could do was stagger to my feet and reach out a very grateful hand of thanks. He came up with just the proper words. The guy grabbed my hand, and he pumped my arm with a great big smile. He said, "I guess it worked." He said, "I packed your parachute on that day, the 19th of May, when you were shot down." He said, "And it worked." I said, "It certainly did. And I must admit to you that I've said a lot of prayers of thanks for your nimble fingers, but I had no idea I'd ever had the opportunity of expressing my gratitude to you in person." He said, "Were all the panels there?" I said, "Well, I got to be honest with you, they weren't. Of the 18 panels in that parachute, 15 were good and three were torn. But it wasn't your fault. It was mine. I was well outside the envelope, too fast and too low, and just happy that it worked. I said, but let me ask you a question. I said, do you keep track of all the parachutes you pack? Do you know all the lives you've saved? The guy said, no. Now, this was the most impacted part of the whole evening. He said, no. He said, it's enough gratification for me just to know that I've served, just to know that I've helped somebody out along life's rocky road. Well, that was sort of shaken by that, and, of course, he and I talked and that evening, and it kind of reminded me of how many people on that ship had packed my parachute and how many people in daily life that we don't even recognize help us out in one way or another. You know, mom and dad and preachers and teachers and coaches and the people who on a daily basis pack our parachutes give us the strength, give us the ability, give us the knowledge to overcome the challenges of daily life. So that has been one of the stories that I normally tell on my speaking engagements is, and I ask the question, who packs your parachute? And who do you look to for strength in time of need? And how long has it been since you said thanks to those people?
We're talking to Captain Charlie Plum, who on May 19th, 1967, on his 75th mission, with only 5 days before he was to return home, he was shot down over North Vietnam. Charlie, let's go back to that day. And God says to you, Charlie, here's what's going to happen to you. Your choice. If you want, I won't have you in that plane. Charlie, your choice. What would you tell God?
Oh, tough question. I guess, first of all, I truly believe there was a reason why I was shot down and the reason why I survived. And so I guess to answer your question, I'd say, no, I accept the challenge. Let's see where this goes. Certainly it was a difficult 6 years, and certainly it's nothing that I would wish on anyone. And yet, I wonder who I would have been had I not spent those years in that prison camp. I wonder, would I have had the self-confidence? Would I have had a story to tell? Would I have been able to speak to 4,500 audiences in my lifetime and touch the hearts and the lives of literally millions of people? And so I think that, you know, I think there was a great purpose. And so now I think I would say, go ahead, God, put me in that plane.
After nearly 6 years, Charlie, February 18th, 1973, almost 40 years ago, you're free. Tell us about that day.
Well, it was a beautiful day in my life. It was going to be tough to upset me on the day that I walked out of that prison camp, but there were still challenges in front of me. We took a big plane into Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, and I ran down the ladder and across the tarmac to the first telephone I could find to call my wife. I had married my high school sweetheart the day after I graduated from the Naval Academy, and so I was hoping that she'd be there waiting for me, but she was not. And I called my parents, and my mother said, I'd give 10 years of my life if I didn't have to tell you this, but your wife hung on for 5 years. Then just 3 months ago, she filed for divorce. She's engaged to be married to another man. They're just waiting for you to come home and so you can grant the divorce. Well, I felt like I was shot down again. But by this time, I felt like I also had the tools to survive this challenge and see it as a challenge and really believe that I could waste the adversity by curling up in a ball and going into the fetal position and blaming everybody I could think of and feeling sorry for myself and wanting the world to apologize for the slings and arrows that I had just been through, and now this. Or if I learned anything in that prison camp, it's that, hey, you know, keep the faith and keep the courage, press on with life, figure out what can work in this situation, and let's do it that way. And so after 2 weeks at the Great Lakes Naval Hospital in Chicago for rehabilitation and debriefing, I set out to be a free man again, and flew an airplane and drove a car and went scuba diving and just set out with my enjoying life.
If there's someone tonight who's going through really tough times, Charlie, and the person says, "I don't think I can make it. I'm thinking about ending it." What do you say to that person?
Well, to begin with, I tell them that we all have a choice, you know. And I think that's one of the things that we miss in life. We think that there's no option, that we're backed into a corner, and that we don't have a choice. There's only one way to go. But the truth is, we all have choices. And the most important choice we can make is to choose our own attitude, to look at the positive side of life, to believe that there is a creator that's not going to give us a problem bigger than we can handle, to believe that there's light at the end of the tunnel, that there's a rainbow out there somewhere, and then challenge yourself to figure out just how to get there. What do you have to do to find that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow to make your life better? The other thing about suicide, and of course we're facing that in the military a lot these days, is that the people around you, if you have any regard at all for those who love you, suicide is a disastrous thing to do to them. And so it's not just you. You know, if you have any feelings at all for anybody who loves you, then you really need to figure a way out of this problem.
Captain Charlie Plum, you're a fighter pilot and a world-class fighter pilot for God. And to all of us, you are an American hero. Thanks a million. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohane.